Honorable Senators, in 1864, our predecessors gathered in Charlottetown and Quebec to consider proposals for a union of the British North American colonies. During these conferences, the Fathers of Confederation drafted, debated, and negotiated the constitutional resolutions that would lead to Confederation in 1867. Casual students of Canadian history may be surprised to learn that it was the issue of the upper chamber, the Senate, that dominated these discussions. During the Quebec Conference, 6 days out of 14 were devoted to discussing the second chamber. Our founders considered the purpose of the upper chamber to be of critical importance to the parliamentary structure they envisioned. Achieving consensus was complicated and generated substantial debate. The result, as we know, is a constitution which gives the Senate two distinct tasks. The first, to act as a counterbalance or check for the cabinet and commons. Our founders recognized the importance of protecting the right to political dissent from possible attacks by a majority embodied in the House of Commons. The second, to represent the regions of Canada at the federal level. It was the second element, regional representation, that ultimately formed the cornerstone of the agreement during the Confederation debates. The Senate was structured to counter the effect of representation by population in the lower house, which gave Quebec and Ontario significant political advantage. During debate, legislators from the Atlantic regions and later from British Columbia argued that their provinces would be reduced to quasi-colonial status under a representation by population system. The Senate and the promise of an equal regional upper house alleviated these concerns. It is worth repeating that regional second chambers are the norm among mature democracies, and especially among federations. Of the 24 contemporary federations, only two are without regional second chambers. A primary function of the majority of second chambers is legislative review, and the number of chambers who perform reviews is on the increase. A second major role for second chambers is to represent regional interests at the federal level. The American Senate offers an interesting comparison on this point. Each state is allowed two senators, regardless of population, giving underpopulated states an advantage. We know that the Fathers of Confederation look to the American Senate as an example. However, they made a significant distinction. The Quebec resolutions of 1864 allocated seats by region, not by province. This distinction and the concept of regional and minority representation will be the focus of my remarks. I thank the late Senator Nolin for not only laying the groundwork in debate so far, but for encouraging us to engage in our history, and in so doing to reflect upon the role of this place and our place in the Parliament of Canada. Honourable Senators, in the words of George Brown, the words of George Brown illustrate the notion of the Senate as the linchpin of Confederation. Quote, "The very essence of our compact is that the Union shall be federal and not legislative. Our Lower Canada friends have agreed to representation by population in the lower house on the express condition that they shall have equality in the upper house. On no other condition could we have advanced a step, and for my part, I am quite willing they should have it." End of quote. The Quebec resolutions defined three regions of the new Union, Upper Canada, Lower Canada, and the Maritime Provinces, assigning each 24 senators. To reflect new additions to Confederation, 33 Senate seats were added for the West, Prince Edward Island, Newfoundland, Labrador, and the Territories between 1867 and 1999. The Fathers of Confederation made a conscious choice not to replicate the American Senate's allocation of seats by state. Scholar David E. Smith explains, quote, "For their part, the Fathers of Confederation did not envision the Senate acting as a house of the provinces. Appointed by the Governor and Council for Life, Canadian senators were in a position to be independent of provincial governments, of the people of the provinces, and of public opinion in the country." End of quote. How then did the Fathers of Confederation come to agree on this vision of the Senate as a regional body rather than as a provincial one? We can start with the fact that Canada's founding legislators were well versed in the constitutional history and theoretical texts of their time. They were particularly familiar with the British parliamentary tradition, as we know. They read British newspapers and accounts of debate in British Parliament. However, they also looked carefully at the American example and understood well the benefits of their position of hindsight. John A. Macdonald had this to say about the American system, quote, "We are happily situated in having had the opportunity of watching its operation, seeing its working from its infancy till now. It was in the main formed on the model of the Constitution of Great Britain, adapted to the circumstances of a new country, and was perhaps the only practicable system that could have been adopted under the circumstances existing at the time of its formation." End of quote. We can now take advantage of the experience of the last 78 years during which that constitution has existed, and I am strongly of the belief that we have, in great measure, avoided in this system, quote, "which we propose for the adoption of the people of Canada, the defects which time and events have shown to exist in the American Constitution," end of quote. One of these defects, as Macdonald saw it, was the fact that each state entered into the American Union as a separate colony, with no connection to each other and only a cursory connection to the center. Macdonald said, quote, "Ever since the Union was formed, the difficulty of what is called state rights has existed, and this had much to do in bringing on the present unhappy war in the United States," end of quote. He is referring, of course, to the Civil War, which would end in May of that year, 1865. John A. Macdonald saw the American Constitution as an incredible achievement, but that did not prevent him from seeing the vulnerabilities of a federation stymied by state interests. The Canadian proposal, he argued, would be less prone to conflict. Quote, "We thereby strengthen the central parliament and make the Confederation one people and one government, instead of five peoples and five governments, with merely a point of authority connecting us to a limited and insufficient extent." End of quote. The central parliament would be made strong because it would be responsible for all the great subjects of legislation, while, quote, "the local interests and local laws of each section are preserved intact and entrusted to the care of local bodies," end of quote. It then comes as no surprise to learn that the Senate was not meant to be a house of the provinces, but rather one house of federal parliament, occupied by members who contribute a perspective that is at once regional and national. Macdonald, ever the champion of a united Canada, thought that this fine balance between region and federation, minority and majority, was the pinnacle of success. With the agreement of Confederation, he said, quote, "We have avoided the great source of weakness which has been the cause of the disruption of the United States. We have avoided all conflict of jurisdiction and authority," end of quote. It is important to consider the effort behind these words. The Fathers of Confederation were determined to find a middle ground to ensure that diverse interests were protected within a strong central government. The House of Commons, for all its democratic legitimacy, could not, for reasons of representation by population, truly reflect the diversity of the country. Instead, the Senate was entrusted to contribute a unique perspective that considers both regional and national interests. Honorable Senators, the legitimacy of the Senate as a regional body was called into question soon after Confederation. Some have argued that the Senate would have been better equipped to represent the regions if the provincial governments appointed senators. As we know, there is a long history of provincial representatives calling for increased influence over the selection process. Some argued that other institutions provide a stronger regional voice on the national stage, making the Senate obsolete. In November 2013, Saskatchewan Premier Brad Wall argued that, quote, the provinces have filled a vacuum left by a Senate, end of quote, and that, quote, the de facto balance to a federal government is the provincial governments of this country, end of quote. Premier Wall's interpretation of regional representation contrasts with the vision for the Senate the Fathers of Confederation had. Regions and provinces are not the same, nor do they represent the same interests. Former Quebec politician and professor Gil Remillard explains, quote, the Fathers wanted to assign the Senate the important function ensuring that minorities, originally referring to the Anglophone population of Quebec and Francophone minorities in other provinces, would be represented in the Senate, end of quote. In Quebec, there are 24 electoral districts, and a number were chosen for the Anglophone minority that composed them. Remillard concludes, quote, results enabled senators to be representative of the minorities and to speak in that capacity in the debates and proceedings of the Senate, end of quote. Honorable senators, as we all know, Canada is a vast country with variations in culture, language, and identity. The Fathers of Confederation recognized a fundamental need to accommodate for differences within a federation. In 1865, George Brown identified the need to recognize a diversity of interests by way of an upper chamber. The recognition of diversity of interests extends not only to units of the Federation, the provinces, but to differing interests within each province. Brown explains, quote, in maintaining the existing sectional boundaries and handing over the control of local matters to local bodies, we recognize to a certain extent a diversity of interests, and it was quite natural that the protection of those interests by equality in the upper chamber should be demanded by the less numerous provinces, end of quote. An example of differing interests within each province can be found in the English-speaking communities of Quebec. The largely urban English-speaking minorities, which number approximately 1 million, have a reduced chance at representation in provincial government. The Senate, built to protect a diversity of interests, offers the opportunity through the appointment process to provide English-speaking minority communities with representation at the federal level. The very same protection applies for the roughly 1 million French-speaking people in minority communities across every region of Canada. Premiers are elected by a majority in their province and may be less able to play the role of protecting a diversity of interests. Instead, they are champions of the essential interests of their province, and they do not possess dual vision, the opportunity to consider both provincial and national interests. Professor Janet Azenstadt identifies the strength of dual vision when she explains, quote, the local interests cannot be neglected, but neither can the responsibility to consider local interests in the context of the national good. Note that there is no similar dilemma for the premiers in their role as provincial champions. Honorable senators, for those who argue that the Senate has not done its due diligence as a regional body and representative of minorities, I would remind them of a recent study conducted in 2010 by the Standing Senate Committee on Official Languages of the realities of English-speaking communities in Quebec, particularly the various aspects affecting their development and vitality. The result is a report subtitled, quote, From Myth to Reality, that reflects the unique social, political, economic, and cultural perspective of English-speaking minorities in Quebec and offers the federal government recommendations on how best to serve one of our official minority language communities. This study is the embodiment of the representation and validation of regional minority communities at the federal level. Our founders considered the role of the upper chamber to be of critical importance in protecting the diversity of interests. To review their debates.
Excuse me, Senator Seedman, your time has expired. Are you seeking leave for five more minutes? Leave for 5 more minutes?
Yes.
Leave granted, honorable senators. Senator Seedman.
Thank you. Our founders considered the role of the upper chamber to be of critical importance in protecting diversity of interests. To review their debates is to understand the complexity of their deliberations. The Senate, as envisioned by our predecessors 152 years ago, must continue to fulfill its duty as intended by the Fathers of Confederation. Thank you.